Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everybody, from Honolulu. My name is Bruce Lee Hazelwood. This is PWT Talks NXT, and I am joined by Nate Lindberg. We do have a show to discuss, but I think there is only one place for us to start the discussion, and that is literally right after NXT ended tonight. Cassidy Haynes of BodySlam.net reported that the WWE is being sold to the Saudi government. And if you hear me say the Saudis, I mean the Saudi government. So, monumental news. No one really thought that we would see Vince McMahon sell the company while he was alive, really. And, I mean, let's just remember, the day started off with Stephanie McMahon's resignation being officially confirmed and announced to the public. Vince is fully back in. And then within the day, it is sold, the company that he helped build, the company that he turned into a basically a billion-dollar, multi-billion-dollar company, now been sold to the Saudi government. At least that is what has been reported. No official news from WWE or the Saudi government has come out yet, but it is early morning in Saudi Arabia, so if news does come, it may come tonight, late night on the East Coast. Now, with that being said, I turn to my co-host, Nate. Go ahead and let everybody know where to find you, and then thoughts on the big news of the day.
Well, I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at... You got an echo from my cell phone here.
There we go. Sorry, we got to use a cell phone to dial into a host line, and I forgot to hit mute on my cell phone. Let me try that again. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT Hits and Misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for New Year's Evil, which is what we're technically, I guess, here to talk about tonight. Obviously, early reports now, I guess, of, you know, a potential sale to this, you know, Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabian company, something along those lines. I not necessarily surprised there's a sale, surprised maybe that it is to a Saudi Arabian company or I don't know. I just hear it's being sold to Saudi Arabia. I don't know if that's the government, a company. I don't know. It's all obviously, you know, speculation at this point. Nothing is obvious. As Bruce said, nothing has been, actually said at this point. But wow, what a week. Vince coming back into the WWE, it almost feels like it's a storyline playing out in real life. It's really bizarre. I didn't think he would make it back. You know, granted, you know, obviously we knew he was, you know, a majority shareholder, and there was a chance that he could potentially come back, and there were rumblings of him, maybe wanting to make a comeback a couple of months ago. But I don't know, with the way everything was going and how well smooth everything was running in the company, I didn't think it would happen. But here we are, Stephanie McMahon resigning from the board of directors today after Vince. It was either shortly before or shortly after Vince was named the executive chairman of the board once again, unanimously. Very bizarre. I just feel like we're moving backwards in the company, and I don't know. I haven't really quite processed everything yet, to be completely honest. So maybe we can bring some callers on and talk about this as well as New Year's Evil.
Well, I forgot to mention the other important factor of this sale, and if everything reported is true, is that not only have the Saudis bought the company, but they're taking it private. So if that's the case, then, I mean, we can just imagine that they're not going to be as strictly overseen or, I mean, regulated as those that are publicly available companies. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. I've heard people wonder how this affects women wrestlers, women management, LGBTQ plus wrestlers. Sami Zayn is Syrian, and, you know, he doesn't go to the Saudi shows for a reason. So there are a whole lot of trickle-down effects in a legitimate way, and not economics, because that was never a thing. But there's a lot of trickle-down effects here that are going to really play a big factor in how not just WWE is perceived, but in the sort of wrestlers they can retain, the management they can retain, and who they can hope to sign, because you have to imagine that the Saudi government is known for being a little more repressive in their personal liberties than we are here in the West. So if that's the case, then this could be a big sea change for a lot of wrestlers. And who knows, they might request release. They might be released and just off of cause because, or not off cause, but just because of what the government thinks. And so there's a lot of, I think, ancillary effects that we haven't even been able to think about yet, just because the news is so massive that we're first just trying to process what a sale of WWE actually means, because all we've known basically is Vince McMahon as the head of WWE.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. I mean, the last 6 months without Vince in charge has been, I mean, at least creatively, has been excellent. I wouldn't say excellent, but I'll give it like a, you know, solid
better.
B. Yeah, solid B. You know, you've heard that there's so much more serenity backstage. People aren't necessarily, you know, worried about Vince snapping down there, you know, snapping at them and things like that, and all the weird idiosyncrasies that Vince brings to the table. This is going to be a very interesting next week or two, I think. I think even tomorrow morning, you know, when, because as we record this, this is Tuesday night after NXT New Year's Evil. The recording of this will probably drop either, you know, midday Wednesday or early Thursday on the Daily Cast. But when we wake up tomorrow, Wednesday morning, you know, there could be some more news, you know, that we haven't heard yet. So this, I guess, stay tuned, because this is a wild ride.
Well, and the last thing I'll say before I move to callers and the actual show is, myself included, this is going to cause a lot of viewers to reconsider their viewing habits with WWE and if they actually consume the product anymore, because,
yeah,
you know, not watching Crown Jewel is one thing, because that's the one thing that was associated with the Saudis. If the whole company, though, is associated with the Saudis, then, yeah, it really becomes a difficult proposition for many people to then continue to support the company when for years they've been telling us that they're about certain things that we know, unfortunately, the Saudi government is not about. So we'll keep an eye on that as well. Again, it's something that I'm going to have to grapple with myself too. So yeah, just another thing to think about.
For sure. Let's actually talk about New Year's Evil, the thing we're here to talk about tonight. Because we had a PLE. We had a PLE amongst all of this other crazy stuff. And talk about crazy. This was a bit of a weird, crazy show. Very strangely paced. I wouldn't say it was a bad show, but it wasn't a good show either. Like I said, very strangely paced, some really odd finishes here. We didn't get a lot of satisfying endings, some long matches. We got Jinder Mahal. There was a whole bunch of crazy things going on here tonight. So let's talk first about, we'll talk about the main event match, the 20 woman battle royal. This, just like most battle royals, the beginning of this match up until the last, you know, handful of women were in the ring was, you know, pretty chaotic, a bit of a cluster. You know, we saw Cora Jade get eliminated mere seconds after the bell rang, by Lyra Valkyra. It was a bit of a cluster here. We wound up seeing the final four coming down to Lyra Valkyra, Sol Ruka, as well as both members of Toxic Attraction, Gigi Dolin and JC Jane. And I kind of had a feeling we'd wind up seeing, you know, it come down to one member of Toxic Attraction and maybe Sol Ruka or something like that, or Lyra Valkyra. But no, it wound up being JC Jane versus Gigi Dolin at the end. And they, you know, turned on one another. They fought a little bit on the top turnbuckle, very oddly, awkwardly, clumsily. And then they both punched each other in the head for like the zillionth time and fell backwards off the turnbuckle at the same time. recreating the John Cena Batista moment from the Royal Rumble when Vince McMahon came out and tore both of his quads right after, legit. And nobody really knew who won the match. They actually showed a monitor and referees checking an instant replay of a match, which is not something you ever really see in wrestling, something we've talked about, like, why don't they ever do that? And here they are. They did it. They checked an instant replay, and we actually, rather than declaring a no contest, which is kind of what I expected them to do, they declared both members of Toxic Attraction the winner and immediately announced a triple threat match for Vengeance Day between Gigi Dolin, JC Jane, and Roxanne Perez for the NXT Women's title. Not really sure how I feel about this. I'm not a big fan of triple threat matches in the first place. I don't feel like Toxic Attraction belongs in the main event now that Mandy Rose is gone. Gigi Dolin and JC Jane are not main event players right now, at least in their current incarnation. They had an interview segment earlier in the night where both of them, gave a quick little promo each. Both promos were very poorly recited. It did not come off well. This very interesting choice here. I can't say I necessarily saw both members of Toxic Attraction winning. Maybe one of them, I would kind of give a small percentage to win this and face Roxanne Perez. But I thought we were going to go a different direction, like something like Zoe Stark. Cora Jade was, obviously a front runner here for this match, considering her history with Roxanne Perez. We talked about that a little bit last week, but, we weren't sure if they were going to necessarily go back to that well so soon, and clearly, they didn't. But there were a lot of different directions they could go here, and I'm not sure if Toxic Attraction versus Roxanne Perez at Vengeance Day is the direction that I want to see or was really even expecting whatsoever. Bruce, your thoughts on the main event?
A lot of moving parts in this match. The beginning was pretty hectic, though. I think getting Jade out the way early and quickly, almost like a Santino Marella moment, was actually a good ploy here, a good storyline decision, because, for one, I also thought it was too early to go back to Jade and Perez right now. And I said last week that I think the eventual Jade match with Perez is when you feel like Jade as the heel is ready to take the mantle from Perez and become the new NXT champion. So for me, that was fine. And I do like how they kept that through line of Jade being so mad at Valkyria. She kept trying to come back and eliminate her. She did it two more times. And the first time she was basically eliminated again when she was tossed over the top by Valkyria, who I said last week was a dark horse pick to win. And I was close. She was third out of the 20 women, so that was as close to a dark horse as you can get when two people are declared victors. So beyond that, the second time she came to distract, or she tried to eliminate Valkyria, she caused a distraction with Valkyria on the apron, which allowed Dolin and Jane to then eliminate her, leaving them two as the final participants in the match. And so this show in general was just a weird show. It was paced weird. It was odd. The endings are to some of these matches, particularly the high stakes matches, also were just, it was overbooked. And here, I think, though, if you're not going to go with Valkyria, you think it's too early, even though I thought it could have been a good way to go. If you're not going to go with, Zoe Stark again, and if you're not going to go with someone like Wendy Chu or Alba Fire, then this is probably the best way to go, because Dolin and Jane, I don't trust either to be in a main event singles match yet. And that's no knock against them. That is just my kind of assessment of how I see their abilities. And they've been in a tag team this long for a reason, in my opinion. And I think they should remain in a tag team. for same reason. Now, the thing about the triple threat match is it does allow for a bit of hiding of the weaknesses that those two have because they are not singles wrestlers. And I think the best thing they did here was when Perez came out after the match, she did not look intimidated. She looked at both of them confidently. And for me, that's a good thing for the babyface, but also it might be the best thing to do to have the underdog babyface champion have to overcome not one but two competitors in her first title defense to really put her over as a legitimate champion. So I want to hold out hope and be a little more optimistic here. NXT triple threat matches tend to be, I say, a bit better than what you see on Raw and SmackDown. Then again, with all the news happening, who knows if anything regarding booking changes. For me, I'm going to be a little more optimistic about the situation here and what they did and assume that, you know, for Zoe Stark, it looks like her and Sol Ruka are going to be in a feud. Sol Ruka also had the thing with All the Fire earlier in the night. Valkyria has her stuff with Cora Jade being set up. You have Lash Legend and Kiana James after their little being eliminated and then fighting with each other, which then allowed Danny Palmer to get thrown onto them. So they had a lot of moving parts in here. Not all worked, but they're at least setting things up for other women in the match, which you should do in this kind of match. So I just want to be a little more optimistic in their future sight here and say that I'm intrigued and will still hold out a bit of trepidation in terms of the execution of the triple threat match, even though I think it's probably the smart way to go here if you're not going to go with the Zoe Stark type of talent.
All right, let's move things along because we've got three people on the phones. We've got some emails. We've got a whole plethora of other things to talk about. So let's go. I think this is Sean in Baltimore, but we're going to go to area code 410. Go ahead. Let us know what you got.
Now, Sean is one of my besties, but this is Keith in Baltimore. Sean is in McCreesboro, Tennessee.
All right.
Yeah.
Reverend, how are we doing tonight?
Fine, fine. I'm going to make it short and brief so you can get to Sean. I just want to say, before we even get to this NXT show, which I greatly underwhelmed, all I have to say is one word about the Saudi deal. Shame. Now, getting on to tonight's show, it greatly underwhelmed for me. I mean, you could tell that they just basically kind of cut us short tonight just to set up for Vengeance Day on February 4th. The Grayson Waller-Bron Breakker match was horrible. It was too hokey. It's the kind of stuff that led WCW to go out of business. I mean, you had two rope breaks during the main event match. Come on. Guys get paid good money, and you guys know that, to put those ring ropes together and all of that. And even the referees helped to put them together. That's part of their duties before an hour before the show. So that's inexcusable. And to have it end like that, you know, was hideous to me. So we'll see where it goes. You know, I still think they're going to end up putting a strap on Grayson Waller. Or they could, the alternative would be for Braun to defeat Grayson and have Carmelo kind of interject himself in that match, because I think Carmelo is going to be the next person in line, no matter who comes out of Vengeance Day as the champion. Now, if it is Grayson Waller, which I think it will be, I have a feeling that they may turn Carmelo babyface because he is very popular. So give me your thoughts on the main event match. I'll step aside, let you marinate on that, and bring in Sean from Murfreesboro. And always good talking to you guys. Thanks for taking my call. Have a good night.
All right, Keith, thank you very much, as always. So, yeah, we had an NXT championship match, as Keith said, between Grayson Waller and Bron Breakker. This match had some stuff going on in it here. The match itself wasn't really anything that I wasn't this is basically exactly what I was expecting, more or less. But Bron Breakker gets some of his stuff in. Grayson Waller outsmarts him every once in a while. And then, you know, Bron Breakker gets his stuff in, and Grayson Waller outsmarts him again. Midway through the match, though, Grayson Waller basically did some sort of like a, it was like a shoulder tackle or something like that to Bron Breakker, sending Bron Breakker into the turnbuckle, right into the second rope. The second rope snapped. Now, originally I thought this might have been legit. I wasn't sure, but originally I thought this might be legit. It looked like there was some confusion in the ring or something like that. I'm almost wondering if the rope was not supposed to snap here, and it was actually supposed to snap in the later segment when the rope snapped again, or the turnbuckle snapped again, sending the second rope, you know, very slack as Grayson Waller was walking on the second rope to do some sort of a move. When it snapped again, he basically tumbled, he being Grayson Waller, tumbled outside the ring, and the ref started to count to 10. Grayson Waller jumped back into the ring and grabbed the loose rope and fell back onto the floor. Technically, I don't know. Did he get the rope? I don't know. And as far as I'm aware, I always thought you had to get back into the ring, not just touch the rope to break the 10 count. But hey, wrestling. This was a very overbooked match. I'm not sure I really dug the finish here. I wanted to see Bron Breakker lose. I want to see his title reign come to an end. It's been stale for months and months and months at this point. Grayson Waller, I think, would be a great heel champion, great person to take it off of Bron Breakker. Now, I feel like a lot of this show tonight was basically it was kind of like non-consequential. There really weren't any major consequences coming out of tonight. Most of, you know, anything that had substance, you know, there was some sort of a botched angle, the 20 women battle royal, for example. You know, this angle here with Grayson Waller and Bron Breakker, you know, we did not get a definitive finish. In a way, it kind of sort of makes sense because they're building the Vengeance Day, which is going to be their first PLE in front of in front of an audience that isn't the Performance Center. You know, well, because it's the first PLE where they're going to be back on the road in front of a much larger audience. So I guess maybe they're trying to build their feuds to blow off there. But man, maybe just don't do New Year's Evil if that's the case. This just felt like kind of a Wednesday night show that went wrong. Just a typical Wednesday night NXT that just kind of they tried a little too hard and failed. That's kind of how I feel about this entire, not just this match, but this entire show. Bruce, on Breakker versus Waller.
The good Reverend pretty much said it well. The ending, I don't think the ending just took people out of the match, because I think the ending took the fans out of the rest of the card. This was the top of the hour main event, and the crowd was just out of it for the rest of the night, you know, for Creed versus Jinder Mahal, and maybe because it was Jinder Mahal, but they really weren't there. They really weren't there for the Battle Royal either. So, and it wasn't the first finish of the night that was a bit weird. When we get to D'Angelo versus Dijak, we'll talk about that too. But and then we talked about the finish to the main event. I don't know why they have to be so. It's okay to have clean wins and losses. I don't understand why that is such a big hill to overcome for bookers in professional wrestling, in modern professional wrestling, I should say. And I'm guessing the purpose here is that they didn't want to give Breakker or Waller any sort of they wanted to keep both of them strong, basically. But I think the ending just makes everything just stupid because so the rope breaking the first time, okay, that makes sense. There was the big collision, and then he threw him into the rope, into the turnbuckle again, and he went head first. Okay, I understand. He has a big spear. He could use that to put over the power of his spear, more or less. The second one just seemed to be out of nowhere while Waller was going around the rope. I guess how I look at this is that that was your plan. Don't book the match. Just run an injury angle, do something, you know. It just, the whole flow of the night, even though the flow of the night was, again, it was the pace of the show was weird. It just really took it out of not just the crowd, but the viewers too. And I also am someone who wants Breakker's title reign to end. We've said before that for us, we would forget who was champion at times because we just, Breakker just didn't make an impact on us as viewers. And we're covering the show. It's our job to know these things. And Waller would be a great foil for anybody, but him and Hayes with Williams going on, going toe-to-toe on the mic, him and Hayes in a match together, of course, that's much better than what we have at Bron Breakker. And that's not to say Bron Breakker is going to be anything less than solid when he gets to Raw or SmackDown. He's really made for a Raw type of show. But in NXT, I think he's just not in the right role right now. And you know, people at NXT have had that before. Baron Corbin became someone who, once he left, kind of resonated more. The big one, of course, being Elias, where he really didn't have anything on the show, and then he's still doing basically the same gimmick and is still on getting paid on TV. So, yeah, the ending just really, really took it out of the rest of the show. And I think when you look back at this PLE Lite, that's, you know, it's on TV, it's not one of the Peacock ones, this is the match he turned to as to where the whole car just went on a downturn.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and then obviously at the end of the show, after the 20-woman Battle Royal, we did see Shawn Michaels have Grayson Waller and Bron Breakker sitting down in the back at a, you know, conference room table of sorts, and he announced that the two of them, you know, those two are going to face one another once again at Vengeance Day in a steel cage for the NXT title in a rematch. You know, like I said, it doesn't surprise me that we're going to see the blow-off there, assuming that's the blow-off. But, hey, a cage match is supposed to be for a blow-off, so hopefully that's actually what we see. I'm ready for Bron Breakker's title reign to come to an end, and I hope that whatever way it happens, it isn't quite as hokey as the finish we saw here tonight. I applaud them for trying something different. I got to give them that. But, man, it was overbooked. I think if the plan was for the rope to snap and Grayson Waller to just use it as a rope break rather than the rope snapping twice, like I think that first break might have actually been by accident, and it wasn't supposed to happen. I don't know. It could be wrong. Yeah, maybe it was foreshadowing for the rest of the match, but or that second spot in the match, rather. But, yeah, I don't know. This definitely did not hit here for me. All right, let's move on because we actually now have we've got three more people in the queue, bringing us to a total of four callers here tonight. So let us go to area code 814, I believe this is Ryan in Cumberland, Maryland.
Yes, it is.
All right, Ryan, what'd you think of New Year's Evil?
That was a nice show, a lot better than last week, I thought.
All right. Well, what do you got for us? We'll give you a couple here tonight because we do have a few more people in line.
Okay. First question is on Bron Breakker. Do you think it was a mistake to put that title match in the middle of the show, considering, you know, that they were doing the rope angle? And I think that's a little bit dangerous if, you know, they're doing the battle royal and you're rushing to get the ring apart and then you're sort of downgrading the title by just putting it in the middle of the show.
I am usually a proponent of putting the NXT or the championship, whether it's the men's or women's championship, whichever, you know, is the bigger story. I'm a big proponent of that being the end of the show, being the, you know, main event, if you will, of the show. In this case, I was fine with it because, as we talked about before, if I don't have to actively think about Bron Breakker being the NXT champion, I forget who the NXT champion is. I haven't really enjoyed this run. I feel like it's very stale. It did not feel like the biggest thing on the card. And the 20-woman battle royal to, you know, if that had a better ending, you know, I feel like that, you know, was the clear choice to end the show. But I am okay with it going on in the mid-card main event here tonight. Especially with the booking of it, because this wasn't the final blow-off. If this was the final blow-off for Waller and Breaker, yeah, okay, fine. Maybe put it in the main event. But where they are going to be facing each other one more time in a cage at Vengeance Day, that's cool that it's, you know, in the mid-card at the top of the second hour, rather. And as far as it being like a dangerous spot, especially for the women in the 20, you know, the 20 women battle royal, you know, with the rope snapping earlier in the night, I'm sure it was gimmicked. So, you know, they were probably either they either had a button in the back they could press to, you know, snap the rope or snap the turnbuckle, or, you know, you had to give it a certain amount of pressure and it would snap, something along those lines. And I'm sure once the gimmick was, used up, they replaced it with the actual, actual turnbuckle hooks and things like that again. I don't know what the proper terminology is for all of that, but you know what I mean. So I don't think it would have necessarily been a dangerous thing, you know, for them. But maybe that is why they needed to put that on earlier in the night. If they did have the ropes gimmick, they didn't want to leave them a gimmick like that all night long. Maybe that would have been a reason to put it on first. I don't know. In hindsight, maybe they should have put it on first, because our opening match, which was D'Angelo and Dijak, was a bit of a bore fest. Considering usually NXT is pretty good with coming out strong with their opening match. I was surprised that Dijak and D'Angelo actually opened. So maybe I'm going to actually revert my answer, where I'm okay with this being on, right smack dab in the middle of the show. Maybe they should have even opened the show with the NXT title. Bruce.
Yeah, I was fine with the placement. I thought that while this was an NXT championship match, for some reason to me, again, maybe because it's Breaker, I just felt like the 20-woman battle royal was the thing that was more hyped and had more attention heading into tonight's show. Granted, they did run the vignette before the little video recap of the feud between Waller and Breaker beforehand, which was a really good video, I will say, as expected.
Yeah.
But the match just... Yeah, again, we talked about that, and I guess I'll just hit on D'Angelo and Dijak real quick, since we both brought it up. But, I think Dijak sold a bit too much for D'Angelo. I couldn't help but notice that Dijak's spray tan was all over the clothes of Tony D'Angelo. And then with the ending to this match, so Channing... Somehow during the commercial break, because I don't get the picture, I don't get the split screen because I'm watching through the online player. Sax tried to interfere, and then Dijak got a chained handcuff and handcuffed Sax to one of the top rope, the top turnbuckles on the outside of the ring. And then toward the end of the match, Sax came in and yelled at D'Angelo that let him do it. He'll take it for him. He'll do anything for the boss. And then D'Angelo, as the boss, just says, "I'm not your boss, I'm family," and then tossed Sax aside and ran into Dijak's big boot for the victory. So another weird finish, and it's one of those things where if you don't have, your ring mic'd up or enough of the mics on the cameras to catch it, and the arena isn't small enough, then you wouldn't really be able to know what this ending is about. So I'm not a big fan of those kind of endings, but... And I don't really know what the point of this is here, because the entire time, where Tony D'Angelo is what? The Dawn of NXT. How does the Dawn of NXT then, I understand the whole family aspect in terms of running the family, but it seems like the Dawn would be more apt to let the lower in command, I guess, take the hit rather than him. So I just think there's a bunch of weird stuff going on at NXT right now. Tonight, I think, could have been a better show if they had just focused on these endings. Too many hokey endings in, I'd say, the majority of the matches. And plus, we didn't get any reason as to why Veer wasn't here and why that match didn't happen. And that's what led to Jinder Mahal's return. But yeah, so just a lot of stuff.
Yeah, a lot to talk about. A lot to talk about here tonight. Ryan, what else do you have for us?
A question on the New Rockers Part 2. I noticed Brandon Scott was back in the fold again. Well, I talked to him about him being on NXT since he lives within a couple hours of him. I saw him at the local fire hall one night. He denied that that's him, but it's clearly him. So do you think there's a reason why an independent wrestler would deny that they're constantly on NXT? Is it like that they're working like in the main event at these indie shows and don't want to be perceived as like a jobber on the NXT show?
So hold on. Let me just make sure I've got this straight. So the jobber team, the New Rockers, that or whatever they were called when during the Pretty Deadly Gauntlet segment, you're talking, you know, one of those wrestlers from your local area?
Yeah, it was the one that wasn't in the ring. It was the one that got knocked off like the apron and hardly did anything. It wasn't the other guy, but like the short, like pudgy guy.
Okay.
That got knocked off.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I can't think of any reason why they would hide that. I mean, maybe it's a gimmick thing, you know, they don't want to admit it. It's they're trying to keep kayfabe, so they're one character in, you know, the promotion that you're going to, and you know, a different character in WWE. I don't know if maybe it's a WWE thing where they, you know, tell them to keep it hush hush or something like that. But yeah, Bruce, any thoughts?
I would just think that, you know, they're probably not able to use their independent name in WWE because WWE likes to give everybody, even jobbers, just random names. So in that sense, maybe that's why. I don't know, because when it comes to things like Dark and Dynamite and whatnot, I tend to see independent wrestlers voice their, or at least put out that they were, that was them or they're on there. People at least notice them. So I really have no other idea that that might be it, but yeah.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, we're any follow-up on that or any one? I'll give you one more. We get somebody else in the queue.
Okay, final question is on Jensen. I don't know if you're familiar with the gimmick that Robin Green used to do in WCW. She was the manager of the Steiners, and she became a woman. Is Jensen like the male version of woman, do you think?
I don't know if I could necessarily comment on that, Bruce, at all. I'm not sure if I'm really picking up even on the comparison, really.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Normally, we might let you elaborate a little bit more on that, but we got a couple more people in queue and got a couple emails to hit and plenty of other things to talk about here tonight. So thank you very much, as always. And we're going to move on to area code 914. Go ahead. Let us know what you got for us tonight.
Hey, Bruce. This is Brad in Florida. How are you?
Hey, Brad. Not too bad. How are we doing tonight?
Hey, guys. Good. So, you know, I, like Ryan, found I couldn't believe it when the Bron Breakker-Grayson Waller match was starting in the middle of the show. And, you know, it really did come across as strange to me. I said, why the hell are they doing this now? And really, like, they could have absolutely have ended the show with that match and then had Shawn Michaels come out to the ring and said, no, it's not ending like this. We're running this back at Vengeance Day, and then that could have been the way it went off the air. Regardless, you know, I did find the placement of everything, like you said, to be a little bit wonky. I think they should have started with the Battle Royal, certainly not the Tony D'Angelo match that, you know, really was for no stakes. I think you got to start with stakes and end with stakes, and that didn't happen tonight. I think Waller.
I'll take a ribeye.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You don't want the filet. You're sure, right?
No. I'm a ribeye man.
There you go, buddy. I think, you know, it was weird how, first of all, Carmelo seems completely marginalized. I feel like absolutely nothing left for him to do on this roster. Whatever he's doing with Apollo Crews or whatever it is, it seems worthless. It seems stupid. It seems meaningless. I think it's really time to bring him up. I'm really surprised they haven't done it already. I think he should have come out there tonight and given a speech on how he's declaring for the Royal Rumble personally. But I'm wondering, with regards to the Royal Rumble, if the reason why they didn't allow the championship change to Grayson Waller go through, because I do think Waller would be a fine more than fine, an exemplary champion for NXT, an exciting champion for NXT. I'm wondering if the reason why they didn't allow that through is because they want Bron Breakker to come out at the Royal Rumble as a participant with that NXT championship to kind of give him that, that sort of that stature boost in everyone's eyes on a gigantic stage. And I'm wondering if that's, in your opinion, potentially why they pushed this off to February 4th, the week after the Royal Rumble. You know, maybe he could, you know, maybe he laughs to the top five or six and he says, I was exhausted from that Royal Rumble, took a lot out of me, and that's why I lost to Waller or whatever. I don't know, but do you think that's a possibility that they wanted him to have that belt and he is going to actually be in the Royal Rumble and that's kind of his main roster coming out party before losing it shortly after to someone like Waller?
That would sure explain the booking tonight. I haven't really given that much thought. I know the Rumble's coming up, but in my head, we're still in the middle of summer. I can't believe Christmas just happened and that the Rumble's coming up. So, I hadn't really given that much thought. But, man, if that is the case, it makes a lot of sense, right? Bron Breakker, that they've kind of labeled him as the guy. And I feel like he could probably do it if he – adds at least another dimension to his character anyway. But it would make sense for him to show up at the Royal Rumble with the NXT title belt around his waist. He can hear, Corey Graves, Michael Cole, and whoever else is on commentary, talk up all of his accolades in NXT and how successful he's been, his bloodline, his heritage. They could even show a clip of him, inducting the Steiners into the Hall of Fame, something along those lines, if they really want to kind of play up who is this kid for the people that don't watch NXT. And like I said, that would explain the booking tonight, why there was kind of a schmoz finish here, and it, would bring it into Vengeance Day. So I would say it's plausible. I would say it's very plausible. Last year, I know that there was kind of an edict that they didn't want NXT guys and girls in the Rumble, and I think they stuck to that. I don't think we had anybody from NXT in the Rumbles last year. Correct me if I'm wrong. This year, I would imagine that could change, especially if Triple H is still in charge by then or by tomorrow or now even. I don't know. There's so many things up in the air with this whole potential sale and Stephanie leaving and, maybe Trip is behind her. Who knows? But as of the way things were, as we record this, Triple H in charge, I wouldn't be surprised if he was to book the Rumble with some NXT, involvement to get some eyeballs on some future stars. Bruce, any thoughts on Bron Breakker and the Rumble?
Possibility, yeah. Reason, probably not. And so the Royal Rumble is a week before Vengeance Day, a full week. So I'm not sure if they could work that storyline. And if it was Royal Rumble on Saturday or Sunday and you have NXT on Tuesday, then I think that makes a little more of a storyline sense. And then correct me if I'm wrong, but did Bo Dallas entered the Royal Rumble match as NXT champion, right?
I want to say yes.
He didn't have the title with him when he did.
And I don't think he did, yeah.
So I don't think that is necessarily a concern because I'm not sure how much of promoting NXT during the Royal Rumble match is what they want, if that makes sense. I feel like the match, you're going to have maybe one or two or three NXT wrestlers in there, sure. But I think with the storylines going on right now, they're mostly going to be there for filler. And it's going to be hard for someone like Breakker to come in there, even as NXT champion, and make enough of an impact to where he's just not disregarded or dismissed. So I feel like the whole having him come out as champion angle, I don't think that's necessarily the reasoning or justification behind what happened tonight. I think more likely is they just felt like right now they needed to get one more sort of PLE out of this feud. And the way they felt like they could do that was through this method or through this finish. Maybe they're just not sold on Waller quite yet to be the champion, or they want Breaker to head into Stand and Deliver as the challenger, where he loses, and that's kind of his send-off to go to Raw or SmackDown. I'm not sure if the – I don't think that him having the title is a what's the word I'm looking for? Is a reason, I guess, for him to have it for the Royal Rumble. So, yeah, I'm not sure if that really played a role in the finish tonight. And for all we know, the finish was botched. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? All right, Brett, any follow-up or anything else?
Well, I do think he will be in the Royal Rumble personally. And I'm not saying that story needs to all play out in 1 week's time. But, you know, after he loses, you know, there could be a kind of just a reason why. You know, I was so wiped out, whatever. Regardless, I thought that Pretty Deadly thing was so funny with the Rockers, with Flying Brian and the other guy, the scrub team that they brought in to prove themselves against. I found that to be incredibly funny. Didn't understand the Cora Jade elimination so quickly. Again, I know you guys brought it up. She got the first entrance and just to be eliminated in 4 seconds was so weird. And then I don't know, the whole thing was very strange. And the last thing on that is, and I really like Roxanne. I'm a big fan of hers, but I don't know. There's something about it where, and I know she really hasn't had the time to prove herself. And I don't want you guys to think I'm sounding like a jerk here, but it just doesn't seem to me like the right time for her to have that championship. And I'm wondering if, because they had to get rid of Mandy, in your opinion, it's just that she has that title as a kind of like a happenstance sort of thing, where she was that contender, she was that person lined up to face Mandy, and then the word came down, hey, we're getting rid of Mandy, just it's going to be Roxanne, fine. Because I really don't feel like she's ready for it. And in the bigger context of NXT, like, you have people like Carmelo, who's never been NXT champion. You have people like Grayson Waller, who've never been NXT champion. You have people who, you know, have really, I think, put in the work and have done a lot. Not to say Roxanne isn't going to be worthy and doesn't, you know, feel like she's going to be amazing, but I just feel like it's a little too soon and it doesn't feel right to me. Like, when she comes out with the championship at the end, it doesn't, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't feel big enough at this moment. And I wanted your thoughts on that and, you know, really enjoy listening to you guys. I'll let you get to other people, but, just wanted your opinion on that stuff. Thank you.
All right, Brett, thank you very much. As always, guys, appreciate you calling in. So I've got to agree with Roxanne Perez as champion. I don't feel like she is, I don't know, like, okay, the story that she was on and you know, culminating with her win, whether or not it was, you know, circumstance or not with Mandy Rose, yeah, it was a feel-good story and all, but I kind of agree with you. It felt almost too soon, or like she's not necessarily ready. Like when she comes out as champion, you know, it I don't know if maybe it's just we're so used to seeing Mandy as champion for so long or whatever, but it doesn't – it just doesn't feel right, I guess is the best way I can describe it. Not to say she's not doing a good job or whatever, but it, I don't know. She's just not, I guess, a believable champion. If Mandy wasn't getting fired or didn't get fired, I don't know if they would have pulled the trigger on her just yet. It seemed like that was the direction that they were going, just not necessarily that soon. So perhaps, you know, we still would have landed here, but it does seem like it was, she did win the title, you know, because of what happened with Mandy and you know, her inappropriate content or whatever you want to call it. There was more to that question too. Bruce, help me out. What else was in that question?
Well, basically, she doesn't feel big enough and whatnot. I'm just going to have to disagree with both of you a little bit on this regard. For one, I don't think Mandy Rose's firing had anything to do with her title loss. I think that was planned anyway. And if you remember, ever since she was in the breakout tournament, people said that she was going to be the one to beat Mandy Rose. They pretty much telegraphed that from the very beginning. So for me, I'm going to disagree on that point. I also think that you two are being a bit harsh on Perez here. Not just because she's young and not as experienced as the others, but really, aside from the people who Mandy Rose had already beaten definitively, who else are you going to have had Mandy Rose as a title to? She'd beaten Stark several times. She'd beaten Shire several times. There was really no one else left to get fans behind someone. And it's, look, sometimes when it comes to these things, it's not about what we think of them as wrestlers. It's how the fans draws those reactions. And right now, the person drawing the biggest babyface reactions aside from Sol Ruka's finisher is Roxanne Perez. So, to me, I think there's a difference in us. I think here it's being a bit too harsh for the sake of critique and not necessarily for the sake of looking at things as a whole. What I believe is that Roxanne Perez right now is the right person to be champion coming off of the reign we just had because of all the other extraneous factors that I just discussed in terms of Mandy Rose's reign and what occurred during that time. So with that being said, for me, Roxanne Perez, I think, is doing just fine. And like I said earlier, I think it was a good move to have her come out confidently at the end of the show with the title raised and not show any fear, even though she's going to have to face two people. And not just two people, but two people that have really been thorn in her side pretty much her entire existence in NXT. You know, aside from Cora Jade, the only people that have really made her life miserable has been Toxic Attraction. And with Mandy Rose out of the picture, you get a nice little storyline bow wrap up here with Perez being able to not only fell the giant, basically, in terms of the NXT Women's Champion, but then take out the cronies that had made her life a living hell under Mandy Rose. And I think with that, right now, it's fine. And, you know, like I said, too, Cora Jade is, to me, the person who's going to defeat her to win that title, but I don't think that's going to happen for a bit. So I think right now it's fine. I think she's got to hold it through, stand and deliver, and I think that's a good call. Again, I just quibble with a bit of the criticism because I think it's just critique for the sake of critique and not necessarily taking in things in a more holistic sense.
No, fair enough. I mean, it's like I totally get what you're saying, but at the same time, I don't feel like they built Roxanne Perez up, even though they gave her, like I said, they gave her that story, and it you know, like you said, it was telegraphed that they were probably going that direction anyway. It still, I guess, just feels underwhelming with her as champion. I hate saying that because I want to believe in her as champion, but there's just something about the title run that isn't clicking with me. I can't quite put my finger on it, but I do have to agree with Brad a little bit. Like I said, I hear what you're saying, but it's not necessarily that I'm not looking at the bigger picture because, like I said, I agree with you. I don't think
she's
there really
not a good
was
promo.
Anybody.
I mean, that's her weakness right now. It's the promo ability, and I'll give you that much. But beyond that, I think everything else is a bit too harsh.
Yeah,
she's not a good promo right now, and that I will what's the word? I will concede that fact for sure. But I think everything else is just being. I think that factor is being used to overshadow everything else that she's doing well as champion.
Fair enough. There we go. So let's move on. We did have somebody else jump out of the queue. We had area code 610 a little bit ago. So 610, if you are still listening and you want to jump back in the queue, feel free. We do have a few other people listening that, you know, are not in the queue, one of which he usually is in the queue. So if we want to talk a little bit more, feel free to jump in. But we do have a few emails here. So let's go ahead and hit. Oh, we even have another email here that came in. So let's start with our first one here from Brian Alston. Brian says, hello, friends. I rewatched the January 3rd meeting between Pretty Deadly and New Day in the locker room. Elton Prince and Kit Wilson said they would face the three top tag teams in a gauntlet match. Brian did send this email before. He sent this about 4 hours ago, so well before the show itself actually started. He says, however, what is their definition of top tag teams? Either Sanofi and Malik Blade or two random developmental students? I'm thinking there would be jobber teams.
We got both.
Lose to Pretty Deadly. I know. That's exactly what we got. He says, by the way, I learned who Prince was from Wilson. Kit Wilson is dark hair. Tom Hanks is dark hair. TV show Bosom Buddies. Hanks' character was named Kip Wilson. Success. And don't forget to listen to the VIP exclusive podcast, NXT 8 Years Back, on the January 14th, 2023 edition. Tom Kelly and Tom Stelp will review Sami Zayn's first NXT championship defense. Tom and Kelly also discussed movie trivia, and this week it might be hard to understand what they're saying because they'll be eating French fried potatoes and free Mandy Rose. Brian Alston. All right, so there's not really any questions in there, more just kind of statements and, you know, talking about the Pretty Deadly and the Gauntlet match here tonight. Let's get to a couple more emails, and we can always get back to that match here. Let's get back to the inbox. Kevin Catani says, "Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I've been trying to read all the information about Vince's return that I can, but in light of Stephanie's resignation, what impact will Vince's return have on NXT? Do you think he's only back to help sell the organization, or will he help try to tweak some things before he leaves again? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB and Bonus Point. Office hours are now over." Okay, so I think in terms of NXT, Vince coming back short term doesn't matter. The things aren't really going to change, especially from what what we're hearing. Vince is not looking to come back to creative right now. Knowing Vince, he'll be back in creative next week if he says he's not going to be. A bit of a control freak, and I can't see him staying away from creative. I just can't. Especially if he's back in the company in any capacity. So I have a feeling he's probably going to wind up weaseling his way back into creative at some point in some fashion, but we'll see where that goes. In the short term, though, I don't think that means any sort of change for NXT. I think things are probably going to continue to run as they have been, and then any any changes that happen, if any happen at all, probably going to be a little bit further down the road. I think he, probably is just back to help sell the organization at this point. Looks like signs are talking about sale to Saudi Arabia, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. Bruce, we've kind of already talked a little bit about this, but any thoughts on Bruce on Kevin's email? You might be muted.
I am muted. I was
okay.
So the one thing that's remember about them going private too is this is an easy way to bring Vince McMahon back without having to do any of the regulatory issues or deal with any of the things that have come about because of his many, many, many terrible things that he's done throughout his life. So, yeah, if he wants to come back to creative, he has a way in if it goes private. And they, he's the one who negotiated the Saudi deal in the first place. He's the one who they turn to, so I wouldn't be surprised if that does happen.
All right, and we also have an email from JB, which is essentially the same thing that Kevin asked. He says, "Hi, team, it's JB from Detroit. I know this isn't specifically NXT-related, but it is certain to affect NXT. What do you guys make of the rumors of WWE being sold to the Saudi Arabia investment firm and Stephanie McMahon resigning from the company?" So like I said, we've already touched on that, but I did want to at least read the email. So I guess with that, let us see what else we can touch on from here tonight. Wydot, let's talk about Jinder Mahal. So we were supposed to have a match between Indus Share and the Creed brothers here tonight, which was a match kind of being built up for a little while here. We saw Indus Share kind of protecting the Creed brothers whenever they were about to get attacked or jumped, canceling a match because I think Julius had some issues with his ribs or something like that. Basically, they wanted to make sure that when they faced the Creed brothers, that the Creeds are going to be at 100%, and that they would be, it'd be a fair fight, even though Indus Share were the bad guys here. Then tonight, when the match is supposed to take place, Creed Brothers came out. When Indus Share's music hit, only Sangha came out, said Veer wasn't here tonight, but he was still going to honor the match anyway. It looked like it was potentially going to be a handicap match, when all of a sudden the Creed Brothers got jumped from behind, and it turned out it was Jinder Mahal. Jinder Mahal's back here in NXT. He attacked, like I said, him and Sangha ended up attacking Indus Share, and right before the end of the segment, Jinder Mahal said something a little hypocritical. He said that Indus Share might respect people, and I'm paraphrasing. Indus Share might respect people, but he does not. And then he kind of puts the mic down, and that was the end of the segment. A little weird that you know, they're supposedly aligned now, Indus Share and Jinder Mahal, but they kind of get differing values, but whatever. That aside, I'm actually really cool with this pairing. Wondering what the hell happened to Veer, and if this was kind of like a, they had to swerve a little bit here because, you know, some, like maybe Veer was injured, got COVID, visa issue, I don't know. But, you know, maybe there was some reason that he couldn't be here tonight and they brought Jinder in or something like that. Whatever it was, I actually kind of enjoyed this. I've been really enjoying what Indus Share has been doing up to this point anyway. And we, you know, kind of see them now aligned with somebody. I mean, he is a former WWE champion, even though it is Jinder Mahal. But when Jinder kind of leans into something and they give him something to chew on, he, I don't know, sometimes he pulls it off. So we'll see what happens, you know, going forward here with this angle. But, you know, good to see Jinder Mahal back here in NXT. Good to hear his old music again when he came out later in the night. Julius Creed, and this is actually the match of the actual match that we can talk about here. Julius Creed ended up challenging Jinder Mahal to a singles match in place of this tag match later on in the show. And he was actually granted the match. This match between Creed and Jinder Mahal, I think went way, way too long. It should have been maybe a minute or two. You know, Jinder Mahal did end up getting the win, but I think they could have done this in just a handful of minutes. This match went long. The crowd wasn't into it. It was after the NXT championship. You know, Bruce talked about that, how it kind of took the wind out of the sails of the crowd for the rest of the show. So maybe that was part of it. But I felt like this was just kind of long, a little clunky. It was a typical Jinder Mahal match. It wasn't bad, but I think it would have benefited from being maybe like 5 minutes short. I don't know what the exact time was on the match, but I feel like it lasted like 20 minutes.
I lasted Bruce. 9:49.
Yeah, okay, so 20 minutes. but yeah, so Bruce, on Jinder Mahal, well, on the whole angle, the Creeds and Jinder and Veer not being there and the whole shebang.
So the thing was, the match I was most looking forward to tonight was Indus Share versus the Creed Brothers.
You and me
that
both.
That was taken from us. And so Jinder Mahal's return got a big pop from the crowd. They made a lot of noise. They were chanting for him. Then his match started. And it could be the fact that this was the match, I think, directly after the Breaker. Oh, no, they had Charlie Dempsey and Hank Walker, which also, yeah. So the one thing that was repeatedly said over and over to remind us is that Jinder Mahal is a former WWE champion. And so with that in mind, it makes sense. And I wrote, I was basically trying to be devil's advocate here. So in my report, that essentially it makes sense that a former WWE champion, however many years removed, I think 6 years, 7 years now removed from his title victory, would still get the better on an up-and-comer who is a tag team wrestler who's only been in a few singles feuds. I mean, honestly, I can only think about the Damon Kemp feud as his singles matches. I can't think of other things. So in that sense, to me, Mahal going over, okay, I can understand that. The match, definitely too long. It also looked at times that Mahal was kind of no-selling some of the shots from Julius Creed. And to me, it was more of a no-sell in a, like, come on, you can hit me harder kind of way. So I don't know if that was just me, but it's something that I noticed. And then distraction. You don't need distractions finish. If Jinder Mahal really is – and so, yeah, his whole title reign was all about distractions and using the Singh brothers at the time to be hit the foil for his victories. But I think here you didn't need to have that. You could just play off the fact that Julius was running off of pure emotion and have that come back to bite him in the ass, and instead you get the distraction finish, which was unnecessary. The other thing is, I hope they explain to us why Veer wasn't here, because they all Sangha said was that Veer wasn't here, and that was it. There was no explanation. And then why Jinder why they've decided to team with Jinder when their whole sort of presentation before this was of being honorable, and Jinder's short promo, short and sweet actually, was of him saying that he's not honorable. So that's another weird thing. But like you, I am intrigued by this pairing. It's going to be a different dynamic than when Jinder was teamed with the Singh brothers, because they were lighter wrestlers who were always there to take the big bumps and to kind of for the comedic bump spots too. That's not going to happen with Indusher. If anything, they're going to be the heavies. And so we could have like another iteration of an AOP type of team in with Indusher, or, I mean, you can even go sort of an American Alpha way, maybe not the technical wrestling sense, but in a presentation sense and their sort of physicality. So I'm intrigued into what this pairing or what this trio brings. I'm just not necessarily sure if this is what needs to be done, even though for Jinder, it's definitely the best thing for his career right now.
All right. Then we had the gauntlet match with Pretty Deadly. We talked a little bit about this already, but we may as well get into it here. So New Day and Pretty Deadly have been feuding for quite for a little while here, especially after New Day won the titles from Pretty Deadly. Pretty Deadly looking to get a rematch. They just said that they were going to put themselves into a gauntlet match. And here tonight, we saw that gauntlet match. Originally, they were going to have, as we talked about a little bit ago, a couple jobbers come out, the new Rockers, Flying Brian something or other, and Billy Bob, I don't know. I can't remember their names, but a couple of jobbers.
Flam and Sammy something.
Yeah, something like that. A couple of jobbers, and they, you know, beat them pretty quick. New Day came out afterwards and said Enofe and Blade were going to be coming out as the second team. Pretty Deadly and Enofe and Blade had a pretty decent match, and Enofe and Blade, you know, they there were a couple times where I thought maybe they actually would do it, but, you know, of course, it being a gauntlet match, you got to get the last team out there. Enofe and Blade did not get the win, obviously. So Pretty Deadly went on to then face Briggs and Jensen, or did they? Because Briggs and Jensen backstage showed backstage that they got jumped, and then Gallus's music hit. Gallus came out back from their suspension from, I think it was September that they said, and they back when they were feuding with Briggs and Jensen for the NXT UK tag team titles. So they came back, took out Briggs and Jensen, took Briggs and Jensen's spot here in the gauntlet, and wound up winning, wound up beating Pretty Deadly here, presumably to get a tag team title match against the New Day. I don't know if this gauntlet match was actually going to give them a tag team title match if Pretty Deadly went won. You know, that was kind of implied by the New Day, but I don't think it was like official. So I'm assuming Gallus will probably wind up getting a match here against New Day. Probably wind up taking the titles off of New Day, considering I'm sure they want the New Day to go back up to the main roster. They being WWE, not Gallus. And we have talked about that here on the show before, Gallus potentially coming back and taking the titles off of New Day if it wasn't going to be a, you know, team like Indusher. So overall, I was okay with this. I think this is probably the highlight of the show, honestly, was this this gauntlet match. It was probably the only thing on the show that actually felt normal, or one of the only things on the show that felt normal. Everything else I felt like kind of had just some weird cadence and weird vibes to it. But overall, it was pretty good seeing Gallus back here, and potential Gallus versus New Day match. Sign me up, Bruce.
Forgot the best part, and that's that Pretty Deadly had to de-roll their hair sooner than anticipated because the non-match from the Creeds and Indusher. Seeing them in the back with their hair. Yeah, it was pretty funny. Last week, I think I said it, but I know one of the three of us said that this is a spot that Gallus should come back and probably be the foil, and that's exactly what happened. For Gallus, it's a nice spot to be in, and presumably, as you said, they could be the ones to take the title off of the New Day. I still think the New Day is going to hold it through Stand and Deliver. I mean, up until Stand and Deliver and not just Vengeance Day. So I think that's I'm not sure if that means Gallus is going to also challenge them at Stand and Deliver or if there will be another team. But I don't think Gallus is going to win it at Vengeance Day if that's when it does take place. I'm also interested to see Joe Coffey's role now. Is he? They mentioned him by name, but he wasn't present tonight. And I just wonder how they're going to reintroduce him to the fold because he's the leader of the group. He's the one that goes for the singles titles. He's the one who basically is the heavy, even though he's the shortest of the group. He's the leader. So I want to see what happens there. I actually think that what happened here is perfectly fine because, as you said, they have the issues already with Briggs and Jensen from the NXT UK days where somehow Briggs and Jensen were the last official NXT UK tag team champion. I again, that's just one of those little crazy, one of those little wild footnotes you get in WWE. But now it gives Pretty Deadly, I think for the first time ever in NXT, an actual hill to climb, an actual impediment to their rise. Because even when they weren't champion, when they came in and they were going for the titles, we knew that they were primed to be title holder and that they weren't really going to face any difficulties there. Now we get to see Pretty Deadly in a position they haven't been in and see how they react. I'm certain that they will do well with their character work here because that's just what they do and how they've done with their characters now. And I think it could translate easily over into, you know, whiny heels or just that sort of a dynamic. And so with that, they have Gallus, but then also, you know, they have that, the New Day is still there. So if the New Day leave and Pretty Deadly has not been able to beat them, then we might see Pretty Deadly move up and challenge the New Day as their first feud and rekindle sort of this NXT rivalry that was here and show fans some of the footage so they understand that there's something between these two teams already. And I think that could lead to sort of Pretty Deadly's official call-up and their triumphant debut, I guess, on Raw or SmackDown. And I would presume that a team like them you'd want to have on Raw. So that's sort of where I see things with this gauntlet. I'm fine with how it worked out. Everything was in character. Everything was solid. And I think the right team here, maybe because I predicted it, if it was me truly, I just want to be, I have some vanity. I think it all worked out.
Hey, that's what I get for hitting a different mute button. I hit the mute button on Skype, not on my headset. What was that? Okay. So I went to WWE.com, and I just wanted to look and actually see the title history of the UK titles, tag titles, just to see Briggs and Jensen's name there. And I noticed something interesting. The NXT UK Heritage Cup is still listed as active on WWE.com. I'm curious. Noam Dar.
Oh, Noam Dar.
Noam Dar is the current holder of the Heritage Cup. I'm wondering if they actually – yeah, AK was the first one. I'm wondering if they actually do anything with that. That's interesting.
Well, speaking of UK talent, they played a return vignette for Tyler Bate tonight, too. He's coming back next week. That was pretty sudden.
Yeah, that was pretty sudden. I'm actually really pumped to see that. I'm glad to see him back. Okay, so there we go. We talked about Tyler Bate. Let's actually go back to the phone lines and talk with our good friend Darrell. Darrell, what did you think of New Year's Eve? Darrell is sleeping. Well, okay. I guess we have some riveting audio here tonight.
I guess we deserve that.
Yep, I guess we do. I guess we do. He was listening. That's why I said, hey, was somebody listening that's usually talking, but I guess he's snoring. So, well, that's not the first time we've switched to Darrell and he's been sleeping either, I don't think. Anyway, all right. So let's go back here and we'll talk about, what haven't we talked about yet? We talked a little bit about, we may as well, let's talk about Hank Walker versus Charlie Dempsey. So we saw this match a little while ago and Charlie Dempsey wound up kind of destroying Walker. Walker wound up going to Drew Gulak after Drew Gulak showed up in NXT, kind of teaching some of the students how to do the wrestling. And Hank Walker went to him and asked him to show him how to do the wrestling. and that way he could bring the wrestling here to the match against Charlie Dempsey. I don't know, man. This match, I feel like it could have been better. Hank Walker, I want to like this guy. He kind of reminds me of, like, Seth Rogen from, I think, 40-Year-Old Virgin, if I'm not mistaken, specifically that incarnation.
I was thinking more Superbad, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, hey, that works, too. Yeah, I want to like this guy, but, man, he's still green as grass, and it definitely showed here tonight, especially with that, like, shoulder breaker he tried to pull off. I don't really have a whole lot to say about this. I Charlie Dempsey came out victorious. It really, the match kind of played out the way I figured it was going to play out. Hank Walker ended up getting his, you know, kind of getting a moment in there where he was able to pull out an arm breaker, something that he would have learned from Drew Gulak, kind of play into that story. But I didn't expect him to win. I didn't expect Charlie Dempsey to, you know, actually take a loss here. So, I don't know. I mean, it was there. I don't really have much more to say about it. Bruce?
Positive to Walker here, and it's that each match he's adding something more to show that he's learning. But then the shoulder breaker spot, interesting note about the shoulder breaker. I believe that was Rocky Maivia's first finisher. Beyond that, the spot was bad because he kind of fell and sat into the shoulder breaker instead of getting to one knee. And then the spot where he tried to shove Dempsey through the ropes, I mean, those are the spots you could definitely tell he's green. But they're giving him opportunities to show that he is developing and growing in certain ways. They gave him a little more grit tonight in terms of not submitting to the modified regal stretch right away and getting to the ropes, but then the second time he kind of had to give up because of the positioning. There's just so much more they could be doing with Dempsey. And so match placement here, they definitely got the short end of the stick because it was right after the Breaker Waller incident. But beyond that, like, for Charlie Dempsey, Hank Walker is not the type of opponent that you can use to showcase what Charlie Dempsey does well. You know, you need someone who's at least more trained than Hank Walker. He's just a bit too green to – it just doesn't look – it looks like a car wreck there at times when Walker is trying to do stuff with Dempsey. And I think that's because Walker's a bit unorthodox, so his timing's a bit weird, and that timing doesn't bode well for someone like Charlie Dempsey, who is a very technical wrestler. So, yeah, it just – the quicker they can get to the eventual Dempsey Gulak blow off, the better. And from there, what you do with Hank Walker is up to you, but I'm just not, I think he's someone who could have been left off TV for another year or two.
Yeah, probably should have, it probably wouldn't have been a bad idea to leave him off TV for another year or two and kind of let him grow and develop. Similar like Cal Bloom. I mean, Cal Bloom was in the background of NXT for how long before becoming Von Wagner?
And he still should not be on TV.
well, yeah, I mean, there's that too, but you know.
Well, and this is one of those caution tells that just because someone in a random segment as a background character is getting a bunch of hype from the fans for whatever reason doesn't mean you should always go with them. I mean, this is all because Hank, as a security guard, was getting a lot of love from the fans in the PC, the Capitol Wrestling Center, and they used that to then turn him into an on-screen character. Sometimes it's better to leave those bottles untapped.
I don't think I could have said it better myself.
Or uncorked, whatever the term is, uncorked, yeah.
Uncorked, untapped, undrank, or whatever.
Yeah, unopened.
Unopened, still sitting on the shelf and learning, I guess. All right, let's see, what else did we not talk about? I think we actually touched on every match here tonight. I'm sure there's a few segments that we haven't talked about here, but is there anything, I think we might actually be able to wrap up a little bit early here tonight. Anything in particular that we haven't touched on that you want to touch on?
Yeah, we forgot to touch on Tiffany Stratton's return.
Oh, yeah, Tiffany Stratton came back. There was a hype. We've seen hype a little bit now for a New Year's Eve celebration here tonight at New Year's Evil, which that whole celebration was really Tiffany Stratton's return. We saw some pomp and circumstance, and I think they even had some pyro for her, if I'm not mistaken, when she when her music hit and she ended up coming back out to the ring. She basically just stood in the ring, cut a promo talking about, you know, how the I forget exactly how she put it, something about the best superstar in NXT being back. You know, essentially just kind of generic heel promo, talking herself up, very full of herself. It wasn't a bad promo in terms of context anyway, like the things that, the things that she said were just very, I mean, just generic, like the things that everybody says in WWE, you know, I'm the best and like, I'm here to win and get titles and yada, yada. Obviously she said it a little more elaborate than I did, but she was still reciting her lines. You could tell she was reciting her lines, that they were memorized. I know these people are not actors, they're wrestlers, but still the way that she was delivering the promo really didn't hit. Glad to see her back. Glad to see her back in the mix. But, yeah, promo ability has not been her strong suit. I thought she was getting better before she got injured and she's been gone. But yeah, very underwhelming return here for Tiffany Stratton. I was really hoping to see her in the 20-woman Battle Royal. You know, she was actually my pick to win last week when we were talking about it. Even though that, you know, they announced all the 20 women in the match, you know, by the time we had gotten on the air last week, I was thinking, hey, somebody gets injured, she, you know, or she attacks somebody backstage and takes their place, similar to how Gallus did tonight with, you know, Briggs and Jensen. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought we'd see with Tiffany Stratton. And instead, you know, it was just kind of a, hey, I'm back, here I am, hi, is what it is. I guess it's a way to get her back into the fold, but definitely, like you said, underwhelming on Tiffany Stratton.
Yeah, if you want to talk about rehearsed lines and look at the Stevie Turner vignette later in the show, I'll give them credit for doing the vignette in terms of a live stream and gave it a little more, a different sort of feel to it. But every line was a pun about streaming or something digital. It was just too much for me. So I didn't even write any of the lines down because it was just too much. Here with Stratton, when they first started airing these New Year's celebration things, they would always put it with New Year's Evil right after that. So I just assumed that it was a vignette for New Year's Evil. They did a really good job of sort of blurring the lines there and then having Stratton actually be the one to come out. New presentation, new look. I'm not sure if it's what she's going to wear in the ring, but if so, new gear, new music. The promo, I think there was one spot where she forgot her line. But she caught herself and she went back.
It definitely seemed apparent there, yeah.
There was a long pause between one of her lines, and I think that's where she forgot. And she tried to play it off by looking at the crowd and doing something. It underwhelmed because I was expecting a bit more fire from her with this return promo. And I thought with the character redesign that she came out with, it will be different from Daddy's Little Girl that she was before, and we got a lot of that same sort of tone in the promo tonight. I'm still excited about Tiffany Stratton. I think what she said about her catching on in the 9 months she was here, maybe you could quibble with her saying quicker than anyone else, any other woman, but, I mean, we discussed that in the time of her span in NXT, she's definitely the person in the women's division who improved the most. And I'm just, I guess, a bit disappointed that it seems to be a regression of her character and not necessarily an upgrade, as everything else about this character seems to be before she opened her mouth on the mic. That doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean it's going to be bad. She's still gifted in the ring. She has great athleticism. She's great as a character. I feel like she needs to evolve from Daddy's Little Girl character into what this is supposed to be, which to me I took as not having to do anything with the character that she was before. So a little more nuanced work here in the coming weeks, and I think we'll be fine. But for now, a little underwhelmed, but not concerned.
All right, and with that, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our show here tonight, talking about New Year's Evil here on, since I didn't say it at the top of the show, on January 10th, 2023. And if you want to call into the show, you can call us 515-605-9345. Or you can email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, and I do have one up on pwtorch.com for New Year's Evil. Bruce, who are you?
I am Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me at B_V253, though I've been debating if I should change that to 808 since I'm not going to move from Hawaii ever again. And I'm one of the reporters for the weekly report on PWTorch.com and on the VIP side. And you can find my report there with my written thoughts. And we will see you all next week.
That we will. Hopefully Kelly will be back with us. We'll talk to you then.